This is a weekly podcast to update you on the volcanic activity of the week. I'm one of your hosts, Alessandro Moso.
And I'm your other host, Corinne Jorgensen. We're PhD students at the University of Geneva.
We study fault systems and are here to give you all the sliding news.
We don't study fault systems, we study volcanoes.
Yeah, I know, and I'm here to give you all the hot volcano news.
Okay, first the weekly news and then the focus of the week. It's February 28th at the time of recording, and here are your quick updates.
We start in the Americas, as usual, where we saw several harsh emissions from Sengay, Sabancaya, Nevado de Ruiz, Fuego, Telica, Reventador, Nevado de Chillán, and Corinne.
Yes!
Do you want to guess the winner for the tallest plume of the American competition this week?
Okay, so I'm going to guess that Sengay won, because Sabancaya has not been pulling out all the stops recently.
I'm sorry, because the winner is Nevado de Ruiz.
With an
8.2 kilometer tall plume.
This is
the second place, Sabancaya, with a 7.9 kilometer tall ash plume. And your favorite in the third position, Sengay, with a 6.1 kilometer.
Wow, this is, wow, big news. I did not expect this. Anyways, so today we do have some hot news from Fuego in Guatemala, where the eruptive activity consisted of both explosive and effusive features has been continuing. The explosive behavior is represented by intermittent explosions between 5 to 8 per hour, with the ejection of scoria and bombs up to 200 meters in the sky. The effusive activity is responsible for the formation of lava flows on the south-southeast flank. The lava flow reached 300 meters in length on February 23rd, and the collapse of small parts of it generated some glowing avalanches down the slope.
Telica volcano in Nicaragua resumed its activity the past week. This is not a new behavior. The volcano often produces short eruptive periods with almost a monthly occurrence. So the activity consists of several small explosions responsible for the formation of 1.5 kilometer tall ash plume, and the brown color of these plumes that you can see from cellular picture online could be associated with a possible large component of old solidified lavas among the material mobilized by the eruptions.
At Kilauea, the activity has continuing at very discontinuous levels over the past month. During this past week, it dropped significantly to stop on February 24th, only to be renewed again on February 27th.
The effusive activity also continues at Gray Sitkin in the Aleutian Highlands, Alaska. Lava spills out is occurring in the south and southwest slopes of the edifice and are keeping feeding the lava flow field.
So now it's time to go to Europe, more precisely in Italy, and more precisely Alessandro's favorite volcano in the entire world.
Sabancaya.
Mama Anna.
Yeah.
After the pyroxene occurred on February 21st, the southeast crater produced some weak strombolian activity and then stopped. But on February 25th, some activity occurred from another crater, the northeast crater, which replied to the south crater's yelling with some ash emissions.
Now it's time for Asia. Asia's volcanoes have been pretty calm this past week. We saw some harsh advisory from Sumeru, Ibu, Suwano Tsushima, White Island, and Azo. The winner for the tallest plume Asia edition is Sumeru, with a 4.3 kilometer tall plume.
The volcanic alert level remains at 2 at White Island in New Zealand, where the degassing activity continues and the geysers are building a mud-filled pit crater.
At Azo in Japan, the alert level has been raised to 3 after a strong water and gas emission occurred on February 25th, reaching a height of 2.4 kilometers.
And that's it for the news for today, thanks to our sources Volcano Discovery and the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Project.
So now it's time for the focus.
Alright, so today we're going to chat about a very special and very cool volcano called Oldoño Lemgay. If you're a geologist listening to this podcast, then maybe you've heard about this really interesting and cool volcano.
Oldoño Lemgay is a stratovolcano in Tanzania, which is currently active. This is one of those volcanoes we do not report weekly, because it's been doing the same sort of thing for many, many years, and doesn't change way too much.
Okay, this volcano has many synonymous names, and I definitely am going to butcher the pronunciation of them, but I think it's important to recognize that volcanoes have many names, not just the ones that we geologists and volcanologists know them as. So these include Juenjo Nengai, Donyo Nengai, Mongoko Ura, Basenjo, Mungogo Waboge, and Mountain of God. El Doño Lengai is located in the Gregory Rift Valley, south of Lake Natron, on the eastern branch of the East African Rift Valley, but away from the influence of any mantle plume or subduction zone.
And this volcano is really, really special because it's the only known volcano to erode carbonatites.
And this is really cool because carbonatite lava is really freaky and cool. First of all, it's really, really runny. It has a really low viscosity, so it erupts with the same viscosity of water. Actually, the first time I watched a video of this volcano erupting, I thought that somebody had sped up the video because it just looked like the magma was moving so fast. But they really hadn't. It's really, really cool.
The other cool thing is that the magma erupts black. It's erupt black and then cools to white. Part of this is an oxygen thing, but the dark eruption color instead of the red we usually associate with volcano, especially due to the temperature of the magma. Actually, it erupts quite cool compared to other low silicate volcanoes, only at 600 Celsius degrees. For example, a typical basalt, which is also low in SiO2, would erupt around 1,200 Celsius degrees.
So what are carbonatites exactly? Because this volcano erupts carbonatite magma. So carbonatites are magmatic rocks that are composed of over 50% carbonate phases, so usually calcite or dolomite minerals. People really care about carbonatites actually because they're typically enriched in trace elements and rare earth elements, which are actually really important in technology, so like in your phone and your laptop. So these have big implications for mining. People really want them for their rare earth elements.
Usually, carbonatites exist as intrusive rock, usually as dikes or pipes. There are about 600 known carbonatites in the world, and they are found on all continents, though they are usually found in intraplate setting and associated with early stage of rifting and plate separation.
Okay, so carbonatite magma is a little bit weird, and there's generally three main discussed ways that you can get this magma. First of all, you could potentially get it from primary carbonatite magma directly from the mantle. Another thought is that you have separation of an immiscible carbonatite magma from a CO2-rich silica pore magma. So immiscibility of liquids is basically when you have two materials that don't form a homogeneous mixture when combined. So example, you can think of like oil and water. These are immiscible fluids. So it's kind of like the same idea. Or number three, you could have leftover melt from a fractional crystallization of carbonated, alkali-rich silica pore liquid, but without any immiscibility involved.
El Doño Lengai doesn't just erupt carbonatite magma. The majority of the eruption is phonolite and nepheline material, which is also really low in silica and generally has a low viscosity. However, the strange stuff is that carbonatite aspect, which at El Doño Lengai is sodium-rich, so is called natural carbonatite.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the general consensus for how we get this strange lava at El Doño Lengai from these three ideas I just talked about is from the immiscibility hypothesis. So the immiscibility of a carbonate-rich and a silicate melt. Immiscibility is something that isn't static. It's dependent on pressure and temperature. So at El Doño Lengai, the model composition is a carbonated alkaline nepheline magma, which then at one point reaches a condition where the silicate and the carbonate melts can't stand each other anymore, and then they separate. The origins of carbonatites is actually something that's pretty interesting and is debated and discussed a lot in the literature because it has really big implications for the CO2 budget of the mantle.
Okay, going back to the volcano, it's been considered active for a really long time, with reports back to the 1880s, where the reports of snow and smoke at the summit. In September 2007, there was an explosive paroxysm with plumes up to 10 kilometers in the sky. But since then, there has mostly been effusive activity, effusive eruption, from a fissure within the crater and some small plumes.
Most of the observations of this volcano are actually from tourists and pilots flying over the volcano. This is interesting and kind of shows the lack of proper observations that there is on this volcano. It's really well studied in terms of looking at the mineral chemistry, but if we look at the day-to-day ins and outs of the volcano and we compare it to something that's equally as active like Stromboli, there's no comparison. And this is actually part of why we don't report on this volcano a lot, aside from like it's doing the same thing most of the time. But there also just like isn't a lot of information on a weekly basis of what's happening. And I think this is such a pity. It's such a shame. This is a really unique and interesting volcano. So I think it deserves a lot more of our attention and you know, more rigorous looking at it. Additionally, there's also some concerns of parachute science, which is kind of the idea where scientists in the global north get projects, visit African sites, collect samples, leave and write papers about these African sites without involving any of the African colleagues. There's an article in the paper Elements, which has a really interesting piece titled Reflecting on the Colonial Legacy of Geoscience in Africa, that explores this idea a little bit further. And I think it's really interesting, and I suggest you guys all give it a read. We'll link it in our Twitter.
So that's it for the focus. Thanks to our sources, the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, Keller et al. 2009, Fisher et al. 2009, Yaxley et al. 2021, and Bass et al. 2017.
And finally, since we're chatting about Africa, I would like to shout out to my friend of the podcast and longtime listener, Julia, who's just moved to Djibouti in Africa. Hello, Julia. I miss you.
Okay, that's it. Goodbye to everyone.
Especially Julia.
Especially Julia. Bye. Sorry. Sorry, it's my fault.
I start again.